Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Today, we are excited to have a conversation with Dr. Richard Blackaby. Richard is the president of Blackaby Ministries International and lives in Atlanta, Georgia. He travels all over the world as an in-demand speaker and regularly ministers to Christian CEOs, church, and family leaders. Well, Dr. Blackaby, it is so good to have you here this morning. I'm telling you, just the last few years of getting to know you, you've just made such a huge impact on our lives, and I'm just so excited for the listeners to get to know you a little bit, too. So,
well, it's great to be with you.
And all the way from?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Atlanta, Georgia. Although, you know, you travel all around the world, so you could have been coming from Asia somewhere or somewhere else, right?
That's right.
So let's talk a little bit about your training and education and really what has made you into the leader that you are today. Can you talk a little bit about your history?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a pastor's home primarily in Canada. I was born in California, but my dad and mom took us all to Canada when I was 8. And so pretty traumatic change. And so I went to school there, university there, went to seminary afterward in Texas and got a couple of degrees and have become a student particularly of leadership, partly because I was a leader and I had a lot to learn. And I just got really fascinated by the difference leaders made. And so I read on it, I study it, I talk with leaders, I've examined good leadership all my adult life, and I'm just fascinated by what leaders do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and one of the things, you do many things, but one of the things that you do is go around and build into leaders of organizations, right? CEOs,
yeah.
And, you know, talk a little bit about that and what that journey has looked like for you.
Well, it's a real privilege to be able to come alongside other leaders, and I work with leaders of all kinds. It could be a leader of a church, could be a leader of a family as a parent, could be leader of business, up-and-coming leader who just, maybe they're kind of down the organizational chart, but they are trying to make a difference at the level they're at. And you can tell that one day they're going to be a lot higher up that chart because even now, whatever they are part of, they make it better and they solve problems. And so I just love speaking various settings, whether it's a top CEO or someone just starting out, to say where God has put you right now, where your life is right now, how could you make it better?
Mm-hmm. Well, and you bring up an interesting point. Really, when you think of leaders, sometimes you do think of leaders of organizations, but it really, I mean, it could be a leader, like you said, of a home, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what's
yeah.
the definition of a leader in your mind?
In one way, it's someone who solves problems. It's someone who makes a place better. And so in my mind, there's no greater leadership role you'll ever have than being a parent. There's nothing more at stake than the well-being of your children turning out to be responsible adults and happy adults who love you and let you come visit your grandchildren. And so there's a lot at stake just parenting well. I'd never minimize that. I have a lot of people say, well, I'm not a leader. I've got 4 kids or I've got a couple of people I work with. But I would say, well, at the very minimum, you've got to lead yourself. And you have to lead yourself well, let alone other people. And so at one level or another, we're all leading something. And I would think we'd want to lead as well as we can because people suffer when we don't lead well.
Mm, that's a good
we
point.
Will suffer. We don't lead ourselves well. We don't manage our health, our eating, our time, our energy. We'll suffer. And if our kids suffer, if we don't lead them well, and just all the way up the line. So there's a vested interest in leading well. We can't afford not to.
Mm-hmm. That's such a great point. And to your point, I mean, I think leading as a parent's one of the hardest jobs on earth.
My greatest leadership failures have come in my home, not in my corporate office.
Right. And some of your greatest lessons, right?
They have for sure.
Very good.
Because you get a couple of freebies at the office if you're the boss, but at home, nothing's given to you. You got to earn it all.
Because you'll get called out if
you're
not, right?
Yeah.
That's great. Well, so I know family is really important to you. So talk a little bit about your family. And you can even talk about your mom and dad or, you know, your immediate family with your kids. And you got some great grandkids now. So.
Yeah. Well, don't get me started on those. We'll eat up a lot of time on that.
We'll be here for a while.
You know, my dad, I would call the greatest man of God that I've ever known. Just a person that was used mightily. I've gone with him to the White House when he was speaking there. He's been speaking at the United Nations, at the Pentagon, and just all over the world. I think 115 or so countries. But, you know, he wasn't a perfect parent. He made mistakes. He was human. And I think that's something that in one way comforts me is that I've read a lot of 1,000-page biographies on great leaders, and they have changed the world. But every one of them had flaws. They all had feet of clay. They all had areas of weakness they had to work on. And so, you know, that comforts me to know that I'm going to have my areas as well, but I still can accomplish a lot, even if I'm human and frail. But I've got three kids. God gave me first a son, Mike, and he has a temperament like me. And so, you know, one of the dangers when you get a kid that's fairly pliable and easy to raise is that you make the mistake of thinking it's because you're a good parent. And then God gives you a second child who's totally opposite. And you think, where did all my great parenting skills go? I thought I was a good parent. And you throw all those lessons out and you start all over again. And when I finally figured that my second son out, then God gave me a daughter. And so I just threw everything out and went right back to square one to say, what on earth do I do with this child? But fortunately and gratefully, all three have turned out great. Both boys have PhDs in apologetics, and my daughter's got a couple of master's degrees, and they're bright kids, and every one of them is trying to live their life to make a difference, to change the world, and I'm really, really proud of them for wanting to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I'm getting a little bit sidetracked here, but I just feel like a lot of listeners are trying to parent their children, and it is mm-hmm. hard because they don't necessarily come with manuals.
No.
Right?
No.
And to your point, every one of them is different. So you need to possibly parent each one a little differently.
You know, and I think that's one of the biggest dangers is that we think there's a formula. And a lot of times the formula is, well, how did I get parented? I'll just do the same thing.
Right.
Or it seemed to work okay with my first child, so I'll just use that formula for the next couple. And then we get frustrated when the next child doesn't play by the rules. And mm-hmm. why can't you be like your older brother, you know, instead of saying, every person's a unique individual.
That's right.
You know, so there's a big debate sometimes about, well, should followers adjust to the leader? You know, if you're not getting along well with the leader, should you just move on to a different place? Or should the leader adapt their leadership skills to followers? And I really think, in large part, a leader needs to be adaptable to say, what kind of leadership would it take to get the most out of this person? And this person's a feeler, but that one's a cognitive-oriented person. So right away, I'm going to come at him a little bit differently. This person I'm leading is a boomer. That person's a millennial. Totally different. You motivate them differently. You reward them differently. You communicate differently. So really effective leaders, the moment you walk in a room and you look at the person you're working with, you got to say, okay, what makes this person tick? Let me go at it this way. Let me pull this tool out of my leadership tool belt so I get the very most out of that person.
Mm-hmm. I really like that. The thought just struck me. You almost have to be a student. And I know you've been a student mm-hmm. and a teacher your whole life, right?
Yeah, you have to be.
You're still a student. But I was just thinking, really, you need to be somewhat of a student of humankind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you need to really try to understand people. And I know... can you do that, though, Dr. Blackaby, when you're going 100 miles an hour? I mean, do you need to kind of be intentional about understanding that particular person in front of you?
I think, you know, it does take some effort. But I think when you talk about just a little extra, you know, what makes great leaders, they're the ones who are always reading people. They're always kind of watching and observing and saying, now when I do this, they really seem to come alive. They really get passionate about that. So mm-hmm. I could assign them this task over here, but they're going to just struggle with that. But I give them this job over here, and boy, they just come alive, and they're working overtime, and they're going home at night still thinking about it. They're so excited. And so why wouldn't I line them up with stuff that really ignites their passion. And the leaders who really seem to have that extra ability are the ones who are always reading the people in the room, and they're adjusting on the fly. I've done that before. You know, you start out with a conversation and you assume it's going to be one way, but real quickly you realize, well, this isn't really going well or how I thought. But then I stumble over on this aspect. I talk about this and all of a sudden I see the lights coming on. So great leaders learn how to just adjust on the fly and say, let me make some adaptions here. It's too much bad leadership just gets stuck in ruts. And it's like, this is the way I've always done it. They just have to adjust or, you know, deal with it. And you get these really dysfunctional leadership relationships. But the great leaders, they don't get stuck like that. They're tweaking, they're adjusting, and until they find that sweet spot. And then they've got all these people around them working on the sweet spot. And that gets really dynamic.
Mm-hmm. And those people are passionate and engaged then.
Yeah.
Right?
And you get way more out of them. You're the same people.
Right.
You don't need as many people working for you if the ones who are all passionate and creatively working for you.
Yeah. And the thing is, nothing gets accomplished without people. Right?
Yeah.
It's so it's people.
You know, ultimately, you don't lead an organization, you lead people. And so
yes.
we sometimes mistake that. We think just send out an anonymous memo and stuff in the organization happens. But the fact is, you're leading people, and the really good leaders understand that, and they're good at working with people.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Dr. Blackaby. Hey, everyone. I want to tell you about something so cool going on right now in the Nichols household. Allie, our wonderful daughter and the inspiration for Something Extra, is competing in the Dancing with the St. Louis Stars event this January. Allie will be the Something Extra for the night, and we need your help. Please go to lisagailnichols.com/vote, watch a video of Allie's story, and get all the links to vote. Each vote is $10, and you can vote as many times as you like. All of the proceeds support the Independence Center, a community-based rehabilitation program for adults with severe and persistent mental illnesses. This is a fantastic organization, and voting for Allie is a great way to support the important work they are doing. And we want Allie to win. Pause the show, go over to lisagailnichols.com/vote, and join Team Allie. So, Dr. Blackaby, tell us a little bit about your work with the Billy Graham Organization. I think you just came from the Billy Graham Organization,
yeah.
Did you not?
Yeah, of course, they're a great world-class organization, and they've made use of me in a number of ways over the last number of years. They have a ministry to military chaplains, and I speak to their gathering every year. They have a disaster relief, a chaplaincy that goes in after a major shooting or terrorist attack or things like that, and I work with their chaplains regularly. They have a ministry to law enforcement folks, and I've spoken there a number of times. I just came from a meeting where they minister to pastors, and they basically provide a free conference just to love on pastors and their spouses, and I'll tell you what, there's all kinds of tears. I just had couple after couple come up, and they would say, Dr. Blackaby, you said some things this morning that spoke to us, and then they pause, and they just start crying, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of When your job is just to work with hurting people all the time, it takes a toll on you. And so I love doing that, and I'm really glad that Billy Graham Organization invests that way. And mm-hmm. So I've been real privileged to have some partnerships with various groups that keep bringing me back, and that's one, and I love working with them every chance I get.
Well, to that point, and we could go into each one of these, but you just came from the conference with the pastors. You know, what just... In a nutshell, what kinds of encouragement do you give them? What kinds of things are you doing to kind of lift their spirits and to kind of reignite possibly their passion?
Well, you know, their job is to keep giving all the time. So they're give. And so then they neglect receiving. And one of the things I tell them over and over again is you can't give to others what you don't have yourself. If you've lost your joy, it's pretty hard to impart joy to others. And if you've lost your confidence that God can change things in your own life, then it's hard to encourage others that way. So I try to really help them realize ultimately they're serving God, not people. If your reward comes from people and their gratitude, you're going to get... And I know people who've gone into ministry thinking, it'll be great. I'll just love people. They'll love me. It'll be awesome. And then people, you lay your life down and people criticize you instead of even thanking you. And boy, that gets demoralizing. So try to just help them get their reward from God and His pleasure on your life and His joy. And if people thank you, that's a bonus, but that's not your primary reward.
That's great advice for anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
That our reward comes from Him. And so oftentimes we can get caught up in the applause and the praise of men, and that's not what it's about.
No, and I mean, it's hard because I think we all like to be liked and mm-hmm. we want to be appreciated, but you really can't get tied down to that too much. You've got to have your own calling. You got to look in the mirror and say, I really like what I do, and I think it's important, regardless of whether people recognize me or thank me or promote me. It's at the end mm-hmm. of the day, I like what I do. I like how I'm spending my life, and I'd do it again if I had to. But if you get really hurt and you're always on the lookout to see, am I being noticed, appreciated? Boy, that's a trap that will always lead to disappointment.
Great advice. Tell us a little bit about both your dad and yourself. You have worked with the CEO Forum,
yeah.
which is an organization of, what, about 400 different CEOs across the country. Tell us just a little bit about what you do for CEO Forum.
Well, the CEO Forum is a great organization that works with top CEOs of larger companies in America, and they also have some work overseas as well. But these are primarily Christian leaders who are asking, why did God give me this kind of influence, this many employees, this kind of platform? And of course, they went into business because they thought, well, that's how God's wired me to be good at business. But a lot of them never asked the question, but why did God do that? And what is God trying to accomplish? And how could running my company well actually extend the kingdom of God and make the world a better place? It's not just about piling up profits and riches for myself. It's about investing a life that makes the world better and makes people's lives better. And so I love being able just to come alongside these folks, and I don't need to tell them how to do business. They're good at that. But a lot of them say, but I'm not sure I know how to know God's will. I'm not sure if I recognize God's voice, if He's trying to steer me to do this or to do that. And I don't want to mess up. I don't want to get to the end of my life and realize I missed the most important thing my life could have been doing. And so I love that. These are people who know how to make things happen, but they've made things happen in the world. No one's helped them know how to make things happen for the kingdom of God. And boy, when you leverage these brilliant entrepreneurial type people for God, wow, things really happen. You partner them with God, and that's an awesome combination.
Great. Very good. Well, tell us about something extra that you feel is really critical for a leader.
You know, I mentioned one thing. I think great leaders, some of the extra is they know how to read people, and they know how to bring the best out in people. You could call it emotional intelligence, but they very quickly figure out people and what makes them tick, what gets the most out of them, and then they zero in on that. I'd also say that great leaders have another intelligence, and that is, I call it kind of a priority intelligence. They always know what's most important. It was said of George Marshall, that was Secretary of State and so on for Truman and worked under Roosevelt. They said he always, at any given moment, he always knew what was most important, and that made him invaluable to the president. The president needed somebody working for him who always knew the most important thing, and he just made a beeline for that. And I just find that today, whether you're talking about your business, you're talking about your personal life, talking about parenting, talking about relationships, we spend so much time on secondary matters and we neglect primary matters. Great leaders cut right to the chase. You know, they go into a meeting and people want to talk about this, talk about that, chase this rabbit. Great leaders zero right in to say, but what is critical here? What must we decide? What must we do? What can we cut through? What can we just stop and say, let's not go down that path. It's not leading anywhere. And I just find that the great leaders just have this uncanny knack of saying this one thing we must do. And I think some of that is instinctive. I think when you're walking closely with God, the Spirit of God can help you know what that is. There's times where I've just felt my spirit checked by God to say, just don't waste time on this. Go home. Your real priority right now is your kids waiting for you at home. Other times you're in the middle of something and you feel like God says, pick up the phone and call this person. You don't even know it right now, but when you call them, you'll find out why this is so important. And sure enough, they're blown away that you thought of them at that moment. And so that little extra, I think, are people that at any point in the day, they know what's most important at that moment. And that's something I just pray for myself all the time, is God, the older you get, the more precious you realize your life is, the less you want to waste your time or your energy. As you get older, you have less energy too, so you can't afford to waste it. So
right.
I'm always just praying that extra for me is, if I every day I always do the most important thing, in time, you're going to have an awesome life that accomplishes a lot.
Absolutely. But that's the challenge, right?
And yeah. And you can have it right today, and then tomorrow you get off on some side street that doesn't matter, and your emotional energy is just burned up on stuff that doesn't even matter. And then at the end of the day, you realize, but I neglected this person or this thing that was crucial. I ran out of time to do the important thing because I squandered my time and energy on an unimportant thing.
Yeah, and I've heard you say before that sometimes, especially as leaders and type A people, we are doing type of people.
Yeah.
And really being is more important than doing. And
yeah.
So I've heard you say that so many times. And so, you know, I'm thinking as our listeners are listening to you, yes, I always want to choose that most important thing. But how do I do that? You know, because there's a lot of good things that we could be doing. How do you choose the best?
Well, and that's really hard, especially for leaders, because leaders are good at so many things. You know, if you're not good at very much, you don't have a lot of options. You
right.
know, it's easier to choose between the two things you can do. But when you can do dozens of things and everybody's coming after you, would serve on this committee and serve on this and come to this event. And before you know it, every evening is booked for the entire month. And you realize, now I'm so tired and I'm so distracted and torn in so many directions, I'm not good at anything. I don't have the energy, the creativity, passion to even do one thing well. And you realize then you've made a lot of bad choices. And it doesn't mean any of these activities are bad, but more and more what I'm finding is great leaders focus on a few things that they do well. And if you get a home run every time you get up to bat, you don't have to bat that often. You know, some leaders are batting like dozens of times a day and they're getting a lot of foul balls and strikeouts, but they keep swinging the bat. And I've had to say, you know what, just swing a couple times, but put it over the fence when you do swing. You don't have to do nearly as much, but there's certain things only the leader can do. And so he needs to do those things well and with power. And so do those things, figure out what it is God wants you and you alone to do, and then do them really well. And it's amazing how it will enable lots of other people to pick up the other things. And for them, that'll be their important thing to do. But most leaders could do less and actually could get more done.
I like that. I really like that. And it reminds me of something else that I've heard you say in the past. Sometimes, and there is a verse, and you know the reference
of it. Do you want it in
the
Hebrew or the Greek?
Yes, whichever one. English, please. there is a verse that talks about God wanting to do possibly something new. I've heard you say this so many times. Sometimes God wants to do something totally new in your life. You don't even really know what that is, but you've made no room. I think that that is something that our society really suffers from, is people getting overscheduled. But God can't do that new thing because you've made no margin. You've made no room for that new thing. Can you talk just a little bit about that?
You know, I think that's somewhere around Isaiah 43, like verse 8 or somewhere around there. God says, behold, I will do a new thing. He says, forget about the past because I'm going to do something so awesomely new that it's going to blow you away. It's sort of my loose translation of that. But the problem is, just what you said, is that sometimes we've got so much old stuff cluttering our life. You know, we're still serving on boards that for the last 10 years, the first 5 years were great. We should have gotten off after five, but we didn't want to hurt their feelings. So we're still serving in a bunch of places. And so all of a sudden, God wants to do a brand new thing in our life. We have no room on our calendar. We have no emotional energy. And here's this really exciting new thing. But I mean, we're tired. And because we're running here and running there, we don't even emotionally have the capacity to take on a new thing. And so you have to keep weeding out stuff that has expired in your life. And few things are life sentences. And so if you agree to take on a project, to serve on a board, whatever you might be asked to do, every December, put everything on the table and say, okay, God, what do you want me to re-sign up for another year for? I mean, when you're doing it, do it to your best, give it all you've got, make all the contribution you can. And maybe after 1 year, maybe after three, God says, well done. You for 3 years, you just infused lots of great ideas. You worked hard. Now move on, because I've got something else I want you to do, another place I want you to make better. And you got to have space to do that.
Mm-hmm. I just think that's such an apropos message, because I think so many people are suffering from too much.
Yeah,
doing too much.
And a lot of organizations are getting second-rate leadership because the leader's tired. Scattered and not focused.
Something, you know, if you can think about a time in your own life when something extra was missing in you, Can you give us an example? You are such a great storyteller. Can you think of any stories that would...
Oftentimes, the thing that makes a leader great is also his weak spot. And so one of the things that makes leaders really good is the ability to decide. Weak leaders waffle and take weeks and weeks, and they can, you know, can't make a decision. And great leaders have got to decide. And so I'm really high on the need to foreclosure. And so it's like, let's decide. Let's not walk out here till we've decided. And so often that's good. But sometimes that need to decide has caused me to decide too soon. I didn't really have a clear answer, but I just wanted to decide. Mm-hmm. And there are times I should have walked away and said, even though this drives me crazy to leave something unfinished, I think I really need to go pray about this some more. And there are times where I've been upset and I'm going to send an email to somebody and let them know that I was upset. And I've literally, I remember one time someone had, and they weren't even really the culprit, but they were the messenger. And I decided I was going to let that messenger know how much I disagreed with what their organization was doing. And I wrote out this pretty direct email. I literally had my finger over the send button. I mean, I just hit this button and it sends. And I paused, and I really believe the Spirit of God was saying, don't send this. Stay asleep on this. When you look at this email tomorrow, you're going to make some major edits. But I thought, no, I don't want to have to deal with this tomorrow. I'm going to deal with it right now. It's going to be sent, and I can check the box. And so I hit send, and even as I sent it, in my heart, I know I've just made a mistake. And sure enough, the next day, I know I made a mistake. When I saw that man in person, I had to just apologize to him. And so the lesson for me was, every time you hesitate over send, hit delete instead. If something in your spirit says, I'm not sure, is this a little harsh, a little blunt? If in your spirit there's a check, I've just learned, hit delete, start all over again. Maybe wait till tomorrow. And even though I don't like waiting till tomorrow, I'm not a procrastinator, I want to get it done. I have to go against my natural instincts sometime, because even though oftentimes it's good to decide, the same thing that makes you really good as a leader can also be your Achilles heel in certain aspects. And so I've got to learn sometimes to realize, even though that's my natural bent and it gives me a lot of success, there are certain moments where that can also be my undoing as well. And so you have to know yourself well, and you have to recognize the voice of God when he's trying to save you from an apology that will be coming later if you don't listen to him.
So is there something coming up that you're excited about, or something that's kind of new that you're doing that you want to tell our listeners about?
Yeah, you know, I actually have a new podcast myself that's been going for 2 or 3 months called the Richard Blackaby Leadership Podcast. And where I just once a week talk about leadership issues. It's been a lot of fun. I get to do it with my son-in-law, and he keeps me modern and contemporary and asks hard questions, and it's a lot of fun.
That is terrific. So how can our listeners tune in?
Just go to any podcast forum, and you'll find it, search in any of those search engines, and just put Richard Blackaby Leadership Podcast. It'll come up. Please subscribe to it, and every Tuesday morning a new one comes out.
I'll be subscribing today.
Oh, great.
Thank you so much for being here, and it was just a rich conversation, as I knew it would be.
Well, thank you. Always good to be with you, Lisa.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2018. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit lisagailnichols.com/somethingextra. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen.